freedom. These young patriot soldiers have sacrificed so much in the fight so far. I look to God to give me the strength to lead well and honorably. So, how do you think you can win? Asked Cam. How will you defeat a bigger, more powerful opponent? Cam was like an investigative journalist who was really digging in, asking juicy questions. It will be a long and hard struggle, Washington replied. The stakes are most certainly against us, and we're truly overpowered. I must somehow make our soldiers believe that no matter what obstacles are in our way, we can win with determination and the passion to do so. The moment we give up is the moment we lose. I must find a way for my men to find their deepest strength and remember what they are fighting for, freedom. God willing, we will endure in triumph, Washington said. I just hope to add some small part in this glorious cause. Cam was focused on Washington's every word. He was absorbing everything and kept asking questions. Where did you find the men to join the army? Cam asked. The king's troops are so scary. It's amazing that so many are joining. George Washington replied, You are such a bright young man. That's a wonderful question, and one of the things I'm most focused on. They're all fighting for their freedom and their family's freedom. They come from all different backgrounds. Some descended from the first colonists, many from New England, and new immigrants from Europe. Some are former slaves of African descent. We have sailors, farmers, and teachers. All are volunteers. They come from small towns and cities, and many are from the same family. It's an incredible group of men. All of a sudden, I noticed that Liberty was missing. What was he up to now, I wondered, knowing Liberty could be anything under the sun. Timidly, Freedom spoke up and asked Washington, Are you scared? Washington looked directly at Freedom and said, All I fear is that I won't do enough to serve my country. Well, what about this winter? Asked Freedom, shivering as she thought about it. I hate cold weather. I can't imagine having to live and fight in it all the time. Yes, come winter we will be freezing, said Washington. But the men have a fire in their stomachs, and that will carry them through. So what's the next step, sir? Asked Cam with bright and curious eyes. I've already begun gathering more men and preparing them for war. We'll head to a gathering place near Boston, near a place called Cambridge. He pointed to a place on the map, still in his lap. Right here, I expect to rally 13,600 American soldiers. We will show those redcoats that we will not back down. I can't wait, Cam said. Finally, Liberty walked out of the stables with a mischievous look on his face. His cheeks were puffed out like he just ate hundreds of gumballs. He must have found a stable kitchen or a bucket of hay. There's something special about your horse, General Washington said with a smile. Why, thank you. He is certainly one of a kind, I said. Speaking of horses, said Washington, I must be on my way from here soon. Before I go, may I request a favor? Anything, sir, Cam said before I even had a chance to answer. I wondered and worried a little what Cam had just committed us to do. George Washington stood up and folded a piece of parchment paper to look like a letter going into an envelope. I wrote down some thoughts that I hope will inspire the young men to keep fighting on. I know their days are long and it must become very hard for them to keep going. These words, they're only words, but I hope they'll help in some small way. Could you take this letter to the men at Bunker Hill? Give it to the first general or captain you find. I paused for a minute, not knowing what to say, to George Washington. Would I be changing the events of history if I agreed? I couldn't say no to a man I admired so much. If I did, what kind of patriot would he think I was? He must have inspired many people in one way or another, so really it wouldn't be changing history. Liberty saw the look on my face and started to snort. The sound brought me out of my temporary haze, and I responded to Washington, "I would be honored, sir." "You are fine patriots of the highest order. Thank you, Revere," General Washington said, firmly shaking my hand. "Now I must be on my way. Time is a cherished possession." As George Washington walked to his horse, he noticed Freedom braiding a piece of his horse's mane. It was an intricate braid made with the skill of a master weaver. "I am impressed." "It's beautiful," said Washington. "Thanks," Freedom said, blushing. "Whenever I look at this braid, I'll remember it was a gift from Freedom. Your name is a word that will forever give me hope." He lifted himself onto his saddle and said, "Godspeed, Rush Revere, and Cameron, keep doing what you're doing. America needs leaders like you. I look forward to our next visit." He spurred his horse and waved, and we all waved back, and Cam especially. Watched George Washington ride all the way down the road until he disappeared. Freedom ran over to me and asked with a worried look, "What is Bunker Hill? Are we going to a battle?" "Well, yes. The Battle of Bunker Hill is one of the most important battles of the American Revolution. In fact, it's really the first major battle of the Revolution. I really didn't plan on us going until General Washington asked us to do a favor for him. Would you rather we go home to modern day first?" "No way! I'm not going home! This is way too important," Cam strongly said. "I don't really want to be in a battle. It's really scary, you guys," said Freedom. Liberty chimed in. "I'm thinking in exchange for going, but I should get two extra flavors. Favors. First, another massage from Helga. And second, two all-you-can-eat buffets."
"That's actually three favors," I pointed out.
"It's not that I don't want to go," said Freedom, looking disappointed. "It's just that I'm a little scared after all the stories I heard from Tommy about the Battle of Lexington."
"Don't worry, Freedom. I will protect you," said Liberty. "If there's any danger, you can jump on my back, and we're out of there," Liberty said in heroic fashion.
"Thanks, Liberty. That does make me feel a little better." "Liberty is exactly right," I reassured her, "and I too will make sure that you stay safe," I promised.
"Cam, did you hear that? I do believe I got an exactly right."
"Please deposit that in my compliment bank," Liberty said with a wide grin as we all laughed. Even Freedom giggled a little. "All right," said Freedom. "I'm in, but I really am staying close to Liberty." Chapter 8. "So, Mr. Revere, right now who's winning?" asked Cam. We were standing outside the stables and the wind was picking up. "What do you mean?" I asked, curious to know what he was thinking. "Well, the American team lost the Battle of Lexington Green, right?" Cam asked.
"Not to mention we almost lost Tommy," Liberty mumbled. I gave him the look. Cam continued.
"And a few hours after Lexington, the American team won at the Battle of Concord, right?" "Yes, that's correct," I replied. The wind was blowing heavily now. Little bits of hay were flying all around. "So is it 1-1, Freedom asked. I understood now. They were comparing the early Revolutionary War battles to game tallies in sports. "Yes, you could say that. It's also fair to say that by winning the Battle of Concord, the American team had a little more confidence and motivation to keep fighting for freedom," I replied, thrilled with their analysis.
"Ooh, that's kind of like our team playing Billy the Bully. I mean, after the first game, we thought we were totally toast, but with a new game plan, we had more confidence," Cam added.
Liberty cleared his throat. "Said, I'll jump in here. We're heading to the tiebreaker at the Battle of Bunker Hill, and I know who wins." And then he whispered,
"But I can't say anything, because Captain Grouchy Pants hates when I ruin the endings."
I forced a smile. I said, "Thank you, Liberty, for restraining yourself. Now then, let's time jump so Cam and Freedom can find out who wins for themselves." My plan was to time jump 3 days forward to a hilltop in Charlestown.
since we were still in 1775, I assured Liberty that jumping only a few days ahead instead of a few centuries would be a piece of cake for him.
Got it. No problemo. You can count on me. Mum's the word, said Liberty with a wink.
Here we go, I said, hoping Liberty would stay focused. Let's get going on our adventure. As we raced toward the time portal, Liberty said, rush, rush, rushing to history. Freedom and Cam were riding on Liberty, and I was trailing close behind. I yelled, Charlestown, Massachusetts, June 17th, 1775, Breed's Hill.
Breed's Hill? Freedom asked in a confused tone through the sound of the wind. I thought General Washington told us Bunker Hill.
We landed on a grassy hill overlooking Charlestown. The sun was just starting to come up, and there was a morning chill in the air. From the hill, we could see across the Charles River to Boston. There was water on every side in front, below us, and land to our backs. Huge British warships were anchored in the water between Charlestown and Boston. From the hill, they looked like small dots, but I knew they were huge Navy warships the size of football fields.
Okay, where's the cake?
Liberty asked as he searched left and right.
What are you talking about? I asked, confused.
Liberty clarified.
You said jumping to Charlestown from Philadelphia should be a piece of cake for me. Well, I sure hope it's carrot cake.
I didn't have the heart to tell him that there wasn't any cake. Freedom kindly replied,
Liberty, it's just an expression. When something's a piece of cake, it means it's easy, just like carrying me on your back is a breeze, or a snap, or a cakewalk.
Liberty criticized.
Who in their right mind would walk on a cake? Oh, sure, it might be easy, but that's just rude, messy, crazy talk.
Mr. Revere, are you sure we're in the right place? Freedom asked. Didn't General Washington say Bunker Hill?
Well done, time traveler genius, I said. That is absolutely right. It is called the Battle of Bunker Hill, but it was actually fought on Breed's Hill. An interesting historical nugget.
Cam and Freedom did not look particularly impressed with the nugget. Their expression seemed to say, that makes no sense at all. Waving them in toward me, I said, huddle over here, guys. Let me bring you up to speed. Yes, you too, Liberty. Leaders of the Patriot forces in Boston learned that the British Army was planning to take over the hills surrounding the city.
Get out of here. Were they playing finders keepers?
Liberty chimed in.
Well, you could call it that. The British knew if they could take over these hills, plus the waterways down below us, and the land, there'd be no stopping them. I mean, they could take over the city of Boston and all surrounding areas of Massachusetts, and the American team would lose.
But, Liberty interrupted.
Hold on one sec. I promise, fear not, I won't give anything away. But I have just a little something to add that I picked up playing trivia. Knowing I didn't really have a choice, I reluctantly agreed. Go ahead.
When the Americans heard from their spies that the British wanted to get the hills first, Liberty said proudly,
they said, no way, no how. We are going to take over the hills first, finders keepers style.
Yes, exactly right, I said, relieved that Liberty was staying on track.
We had a second of silence as we looked around. Through the quiet, we began to hear a rhythmic sound. Thud, clack, swoosh. Thud, clack, swoosh.
What's that noise? Freedom asked.
Liberty replied with enthusiasm.
Okay, so are we done with finders keepers? Wait, now we're playing one of those word games where we guess the noise, right?
Okay, let me concentrate. I'll guess first. Is it animal, vegetable, or mineral?
Ignoring Liberty's conversation with himself, Freedom listened carefully to the noise.
It sounds like metal against rock, she said.
Liberty mused.
Okay, so mineral. Let's see, is it smaller than a bread box?
Cam chimed in.
Yeah, I hear it too. It sounds like digging. Lots of people digging.
Pondered Liberty.
You say digging? Maybe mining. In that case, my guess is gold, or maybe silver.
I said, I'm pretty sure the sound you're hearing is men digging a fort known as a redoubt.
What? Did you just make that up?
Said Liberty, narrowing his eyes. Ignoring Liberty, I led the team closer to the fort. We got there as the final wall was being built. The American Patriots must have been working all night to build this fort before the British could find out in the morning.
Man, I wish Tommy could see this! He's totally into fort building. I mean, maybe not the hard labor part. He kind of bails some hard work. But the fort building part he'd love, Cam said.
Around us, more than 100 men were digging, carrying dirt, and doing other jobs. They looked exhausted, dirty, and sweaty, and were trying to catch their breath. You see all those big ships down there in the water? Well, the British leaders woke up to find the Patriots had quickly built a fort up here on Breed's Hill, and they were shocked. My guess is they want to take the hill and are planning their strategy right now, I said.
Mr. Revere, do you think a cannonball from one of those ships in the harbor could reach this fort way up here?
Asked Freedom nervously.
I bet they could, said Cam.
Me too, Liberty joined in. And just then, a flash of light and the sound of an explosion erupted from the side of one of the warships.
Oh no, is that what I think it is? Panicked Freedom.
Sure enough, cannonballs started flying toward the fort from the ships below. The ground shook, and there was dust flying everywhere.
Hurry, duck behind that wall, I yelled, my heart racing.
I'm scared, Freedom cried out.
We all fell to the ground with our backs against the earthen wall.
Everything's going to be okay, I said, very nervous on the inside.
Freedom sat frozen on the ground and clung to one of Liberty's legs.
I'll protect you,
Liberty said, keeping the promise he'd made.
Mr. Revere, I hear a lot of cannon noise, but I don't feel many cannonballs hitting the fort, said Cam.
I stood up to see over the wall.
I said, oh no, that's because they're hitting the city of Charlestown. In what seemed like a few minutes, Charlestown was on fire. Huge billows of smoke rose high into the once cloudless sky.
Wait, Charlestown? That's where you guys met Paul Revere before he started his midnight ride, right?
Freedom asked with a worried look on her face.
That's right, Freedom, I said. It becomes real, doesn't it, when you actually see it happening with your own eyes?
It's a shame to see this noble and great town destroyed.
Cam couldn't resist and got up to peer over the wall.
Oh, man, this is crazy. There are a bunch of smaller boats getting closer to the shore.
Yes, those smaller boats are carrying British soldiers from the bigger boats so that they can start to climb the hill, I said.
Now maybe we should think about our departure plan, Liberty asked.
This is going to be a blowout, isn't it, Cam said. I mean, these American soldiers look completely tired. Those British guys, they're marching this way like it's a school parade.
He watched the sea of red starting to come up from the shore to the fort.
A parade? Now you've made me curious, Freedom said, slowly standing up to look over the wall.
At the opposite side of the fort, a flash of white caught my eye. It seemed to come out of nowhere. I focused and saw an extraordinarily well-dressed man, unlike everyone else in the fort. The sun sparkled on his clothes, completely opposite to the dirty and hot surroundings. His face looked extremely calm.
Dr. Warren, I said, louder than I intended. Wait, what is Dr. Warren doing here? Freedom asked, with the same concerned tone that she had when the first cannon went off.
I will go find out, I said. Liberty, please keep Cam and Freedom here. I know you'll keep them safe, I said firmly. I doubt we'll be able to stay here much longer, so be ready to leave when I give the order.
You got it. Understood, said Liberty.
Immediately, I ran toward the other end of the fort.
Dr. Warren, you probably don't remember, but I was at your home in Boston a while back with my students. You were kind enough to take us in and care for my students' illness, I said.
Yes, of course. Hello, Rush Revere, Dr. Warren said, putting out his hand to shake mine. How is Cam feeling?
Such a personable and friendly man, no matter the circumstance. I couldn't believe that in the midst of this battle, he remembered our names.
Cam feels much better now. In fact, he's over there behind the wall with Freedom, I said. Are you here to treat the injured soldiers?
Dr. Warren kindly replied. I'm always willing to give medical assistance, but that's not my main purpose here. I've come to join these men and fight for freedom. Incredible, I said, almost to myself. Dr. Warren gave a gentle smile, but there was something behind his eyes, too, a strength that was unmistakable. He turned and began to speak with the patriots in the fort. Men gathered around him as if he were the head coach. I had not realized before now that Dr. Warren was both a well-known doctor in Boston caring for patients and a front-line fighter in the war. They're coming! A voice shouted from somewhere inside the fort. I could feel my heart beating with urgency. You could see the massive parade of redcoats climbing steadily up the hill toward the fort. Dr. Warren did all he could to boost the morale of the militia. Be patient. Don't shoot until they are closer. His words drifted down the front line of men who were anxiously waiting to fire their guns. Don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes, a young soldier shouted. Another said, yes, hold your ammunition, wait until you can see them clearly. I knew the Americans were low on ammunition and couldn't hold off this attack for long. I stood frozen still. Dr. Warren shook me from my thoughts as he yelled, remember, we are fighting for our freedom. He stood tall as he continued to move up and down the front of the fort, patting men on the back and encouraging them. The redcoats were now close enough that I could see the silver on their buckles. Boom! The exploding shot shocked my senses, and I nearly jumped out of my boots. All the Patriot soldiers were pointing their guns downward at the British. Stay down, Mr. Revere, Dr. Warren said. You're going to be all right. My heart was racing. Sweat was pouring from my forehead. Volley after volley, the shots rang through my ears. All around, in front and to the sides of the fort, the British seemed to fall and then come forward again. A sea of red starting to wash up all around the outside walls. Dr. Warren grabbed me roughly by the sleeve of my coat and said sternly, I want you to leave now with your students. It won't be long until the British overtake the fort. I won't leave without you, I said, afraid for him. You must, said Dr. Warren. It is my job to stay and fight. It is your purpose to protect those children and share what happened here. We have showed the mighty British Army that patriots will fight. Go now. Dr. Warren's eyes looked like they were on fire. He rushed back, and I saw him disappear into the smoke and chaos. Mr. Revere! Freedom shouted. She and Cam were already on top of Liberty. I ran toward them and yelled, Go! 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 As we ran from the battle. Gunshots rang out behind us. The back of the fort had caved in slightly, presumably from the cannon fire. I looked quickly back as the redcoats climbed over the unprotected walls and filled the overwhelmed fort. Liberty raced ahead, and I followed as quickly as humanly possible. I was exhausted by the time I met up with them under a large solitary tree, far from the battle. Within the hour, several American soldiers hurried and stumbled before us, collapsing in the shade of our tree. Some had weapons, and some did not. Some had shoes, and some did not. Some had frontier clothing, while others wore vests and coats reflective of city life. A man who looked around 30 years old, with sweat and dirt smeared across his face, collapsed in the shade beside us. He still carried a sword. His leg was cut. Freedom watched with tender eyes at his wound as the soldier ripped the hem of his shirt and used it to bandage his leg. Finally, he exhaled deeply and leaned back against the gnarled tree trunk. I will fight on, the worn-down soldier said out of breath. How long have you been fighting? Asked Cam. The soldier slowly turned his head to see Cam on his other side. I stopped counting, friend. I'm not sure anymore, but not long enough. We must fight until we have our freedom, he said. Do you miss your family? Asked Cam. Yes, every single day I wake up thinking of my son and how his mother is all alone. But I can't give up. It's for their future. The soldier closed his eyes for a moment. Cam moved closer and said softly, My dad is in the military too, just like you. I don't really get to see him much. War is hard on everyone, both for the soldier and the ones they leave behind.
even though supplies are low and we face hunger almost every day with little to no weapons or gunpowder, we must never lose faith. We must never give up. We must fight for our freedom, said the soldier. After all the excitement, I almost forgot the original reason we came here. I reached into my pocket and handed this soldier the inspirational note sent by George Washington. What's this? He said as he wiped his brow. I was asked by George Washington, the new commander-in-chief of the American Army, to deliver this message for you to read and share with others. Soldier seemed overwhelmed with emotion. This is really from General Washington? I just can't believe this. This is incredible. Thank you. We won't give up either, said Cam. And we will fight like fathers who want desperately to return to their sons, the soldier said, winking at Cam. He pushed himself from the tree and began hobbling back toward Cambridge. I must be on my way now. I must meet up with the rest of our men. Thank you again. We are proud of you, Freedom said, loud enough for him to hear. We sat there for several more minutes before Liberty's stomach finally broke the silence as it rumbled like distant thunder.
What do you say we get a little fuel in the tank, if you know what I mean? Asked Liberty.
Excellent idea, I replied. I think it's time we travel home. I know how grouchy you get when you're hungry, I winked.
Grouchy? Asked Liberty. I prefer to call it anxiously engaged or persistently focused.
But if Grouchy gets us home sooner, then I'm good with that, too. Cam and Freedom climbed up onto Liberty, and all he needed to say was, rush, rush, rushing from history. We landed back in the schoolyard at Manchester Middle School. As we were walking back toward the school entrance, Liberty, for once, was not thinking about snacks. He said, you know, it's really amazing to think what's happened since the Pilgrims first arrived on the Mayflower. Actually, I should probably say it's amazing all we've seen since the Pilgrims and the Mayflower. I thought we were crazy to time travel to the middle of the ocean on a small ship, but we've had a lot more crazy adventures since then.
Yeah, like being shot at, Cam said with a laugh.
Against my better judgment, I have to agree with Liberty again. It is truly amazing to think what started with the Pilgrims and what made us into the country that we are today in just a few hundred years, I said, smiling.
Cam, note that one in a compliment bank, too, will you?
Liberty winked.
I got you, Cam said, patting Liberty on the back.
Why don't we meet in our usual spot on the field near the track tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock?
Freedom sighed. Okay, Mr. Revere, but can we go someplace less dangerous?
Cam practically snorted.
I doubt Liberty can get us to the land of lollipops and unicorns.
Is that a challenge? Asked Liberty. Because I love a good challenge.
Okay, you're on, said Cam. And when you lose, I get to ride you to school for a whole week.
Well, when you lose, said Liberty, you have to get me a week's supply of fresh vegetables and text every friend in your phone that you believe in unicorns.
Cam rolled his eyes, said Liberty, you're not going to win. Unicorns don't even exist.
All right, you two, I interrupted. Enough bickering. Let's have a little peace, eh?
Pizza? Did you say pizza? I thought you'd never ask, blurted Liberty. I'll take 2 large vegetarian pizzas, thank you.
We all laughed.
That sounds like a good idea, I said. And I'll make sure Tommy comes tomorrow, Cam said, if he isn't too busy scrapbooking.
A few minutes after 9 a.m. the next day, Tommy, Cam, and Freedom arrived together. Seeing all 3 of them made me realize they all wouldn't fit on one horse. Then again, perhaps we wouldn't need to travel anywhere once we arrived in 1775. But what if we needed to make a daring escape? Better safe than sorry, I thought. I whispered an idea into Liberty's ear and watched his face turn from a smile into a sour look. Liberty whispered back,
you seriously want me to go and find little Liberty?
I nodded.
Hopefully he stayed in Lexington where we left him. You might try there first.
Anyway, I want you to tell him to find his way to Cambridge and meet us there. Plus, I think the kids would be thrilled to see their friend again. It'd be a fun surprise for them.
Okay, fine. I'll do it for the kids, but it'll cost you extra, Liberty said out loud.
While the students were talking, I reached into Liberty's bag and fed him a giant, juicy apple.
Well, that's a start, he said, and started chewing as he turned and exited the classroom.
I turned my back to Liberty and faced the kids. Okay, guys, Liberty has to go take care of an errand, but he should be back soon.
Mr. Revere, said Freedom, since we're waiting, I want to show you something I've been working on. It's a painting.
Freedom unrolled a small canvas and turned it in our direction. It was a painting of the old North Church, as we saw it from the wharf in Boston. A man was holding two lanterns from the highest window just below the tall white steeple.
Well, this is beautiful, Freedom, I said, and it really was.
It's how I remember seeing it, Freedom said.
Well, it's great, Freedom. You really have a gift, Tommy added. You should paint one of me rescuing little Liberty at the Battle of Lexington.
I could try it, said Freedom, flattered.
Ditto, said Cam. You're way talented, except Tommy's face might ruin the painting.
Ha ha, Tommy said as he slugged his best friend in the arm.
Thanks, guy, said Freedom, shyly. It's just a hobby, but I really enjoy painting.
I think we should find a special place to hang your painting, Freedom, I said, beaming.
I think we should hang it in our clubhouse, said Cam.
We don't have a clubhouse, said Freedom.
Well, our class is sort of our clubhouse, Cam said, but we'll need a club name.
How about the Jumping Spiders, said Tommy.
Seriously, jumping spiders are cool, and they can leap to catch their prey just like we leap back in time.
I vote no, Freedom said instantly. No spiders.
How about Springtime Club? Because we spring back in time, get it?
I vote no, said Tommy. No springy flower names.
Oh, brother, just because you're a boy you don't like flowers? Freedom teased.
I like flowers, Tommy said. They attract insects. Without insects, I couldn't feed my spiders.
Cam raised his hand and said, I have one. How about Rush Revere's crew?
Ooh, I like that, Tommy said, giving Cam a high five.
Yeah, me too, Freedom added enthusiastically.
Okay, everyone huddle in. You too, Mr. Revere, Cam said, motioning for all of us to put our hands in the center, just like on the sideline of the dodgeball game.
Okay, ready. 1, 2, 3, Rush Revere's crew.
We all joined in. Suddenly, Liberty re-entered the classroom.
Hey there, welcome back, I said. Are we good?
I asked, trying not to give anything away.
If by good you mean did I accomplish the mission of finding the little twerp, then yes, we're good,
Liberty replied, rather annoyed.
What twerp? Said Freedom, overhearing Liberty's reply.
We have a special friend who's going to be joining us at our next time travel, I said happily.
Liberty added, he's a four-legged friend who's waiting for us in 1775, and Liberty winked at Tommy.
No way, Tommy exclaimed. Is it little Liberty?
That's right, I said. Earlier this morning, I asked Liberty to try to track down little Liberty.
It was easy, said Liberty. The little pipsqueak was in a stable in Lexington. When he saw me, he was really happy. Anyway, I helped him out of the stable and told him to meet all of us in Cambridge. It's only about 10 miles from Lexington. He knows his way around those parts. He acted really excited to see Tommy.
Can little Liberty be part of Rush Revere's crew? Freedom asked with a smile.
Absolutely not. Wait, what is Rush Revere's crew? Liberty asked.
It's a long story. But yes, Freedom, I'm going to overrule Liberty on this one, I said. Both Liberty and Little Liberty are now officially part of Rush Revere's crew. Now we'd better get going, I thought. Don't want Little Liberty to beat us to Cambridge.
So what's the game plan, Mr. Revere? Asked Cam.
Well, as you know, George Washington was appointed at the Second Continental Congress to lead the first official American army. Washington faced many problems when he became the leader of the army. He told you some of them, Cam, remember?
Yes. Like his men weren't well trained, and he didn't have as many guys as the British Army, and he didn't have money for supplies, Cam replied.
Absolutely right. Those are all very true, I continued. But one of the biggest obstacles that George Washington faced when he first became the leader was weapons. It's important to note that in 1775, the British Empire had the strongest fighting force in the world, including the Army and Navy. You can't beat the most powerful military in the world without weapons. Well, what did Washington do? Tommy asked. I mean, he can't just walk into a weapons depot and say, hey, I need some grenades to help out my army. No, I said, laughing. An easy access weapons depot wasn't an option, but Fort Ticonderoga was. Oh, no. Are we going to another fort? Freedom worried. No, don't worry. We won't be dodging any cannonballs this time. We're going to talk to George Washington and see how he went about getting more weapons for his army. Okay, that sounds cool, said Cam. Well, let's get going, Rush Revere's crew, I said, delighted with the club's name. Little Liberty's waiting. We went outside to our usual spot where Tommy and Freedom climbed onto Liberty's saddle. Cam and I followed close behind as Liberty said, rush, rush, rushing to history. I yelled, Cambridge, Massachusetts, November 1775. We jumped through the time portal and landed between a tall hedge and a large two-story home. Everything around us seemed to be brick and cobblestones. No rushing traffic or honking horns, just some chickens, goats, and carriages clacking past. As we walked around to the front of the home, I saw beautiful big windows, including attic windows near the roof. There were two large brick chimneys on top. That house looks ginormous, said Tommy. Yeah, kind of like my house. Not so much, added Cam. Liberty cleared his throat and said, as your time-travel tour guide, I can offer you a bit of fun trivia. After a moment of silence, I asked, okay, let me guess. This bit of fun trivia isn't free. Hey, a time-traveling horse has to make a living somehow, Liberty quipped. I reached into Liberty's saddlebag and pulled out a single sugar cube. I looked at the kids, who were all smiles, and I said, let's see if this was worth it, shall we? I fed the cube to Liberty.
Yummy, said Liberty as he sucked on the cube. That's why you're my favorite customers.
I'm pretty sure we're your only customers. And we're all waiting for you to bless us with the knowledge of history, I teased.
This is the headquarters for the Continental Army. General Washington lives here, Liberty said proudly.
Suddenly, I heard a high-pitched whinny come from behind us. Running and pouncing, little Liberty made a beeline toward the five of us. He nearly bowled Tommy over, but instead the pony rubbed up against his back and waist like an affectionate cat.
Hey, little Liberty, said Tommy. I missed you, too.
He petted the pony with fondness. He must still remember me saving him from the burning stables at Lexington.
Oh, that's adorable. I love little Liberty, said Freedom as she watched the happy reunion.
It's a toss-up between adorable and annoying. I can't make up my mind, Liberty jabbed.
Well, Liberty, I said, maybe spending more time with little Liberty will help you decide. The rest of us are going to visit with George Washington. We'll come back outside as soon as we can.
Oh, joy, said Liberty with sarcasm. I get to babysit the Oompa Loompa. I was the first on the porch and quickly rapped on the door. A man in a military uniform opened the door. I assumed he was a member of George Washington's staff.
Do you have an appointment? Asked the man.
Before I could respond, George Washington appeared from a back room, sorting through several pages of notes or maybe maps. As soon as he saw me, he said, Mr. Revere, glad you're back. I was just about to visit with my troops. Come walk with me and tell me your experience at Bunker Hill. He walked like a true military man, and he seemed even taller than before. Perhaps it was simply the idea that he was in charge of all of America's military. He stepped outside, and I quickly kept stride with him as the kids followed.
Mr. Revere, look all around you. This is the new Continental Army camp, George Washington said.
I noticed many tents set up in the spacious yard. There were lots of men roaming around doing different things. Some were sitting in a circle cooking. While smoke rose around them, others were laughing, some more serious. Most of the men did not have uniforms and were dressed in all sorts of regional clothing. I expect to have 20,000 willing soldiers here soon. More men are coming every day, and God willing, we will prevail, General Washington said as he continued our tour.
Are they going to build forts? Tommy asked.
He must have been talking to Cam about Bunker Hill.
Yes, I suppose they will in time. However, the men must learn how to build forts and really anything involved with battles, General Washington replied. Most have never fought before, nor do they have the first clue about discipline or what it means to be a part of a single army. Nevertheless, they have left their former lives behind and are here willing to fight for our lives and our freedom.
Cam smiled and replied, If anyone can get them to listen, it's you. Even now I can see how your men admire you. They clear the path and straighten up when you walk by. I think they believe in you.
Thank you, Cameron, said Washington. Having the belief to win is an important part of my strategy. Equally important is getting these men to work together in one unified effort. If I can get them all doing the same thing at the right time, we may have a chance to win this war.
I turned to Cam and said, Sounds like the same strategy you used to beat Billy.
True, Cam said. I know what it's like to have a team that's totally disorganized and outnumbered, but I also know that learning to work as a team makes all the difference.
George smiled.
It sounds like your team believed in you, too.
Yeah, I guess they did, Cam replied.
Well, what are you doing to gather weapons and supplies? I asked the general, knowing that was a weakness that Washington had to overcome. I assumed that he had a plan in place.
That is something I'm working on day in and day out, Washington said. We receive funding from some wealthy Patriot merchants, and Congress gave some funding as well, but it's not enough. We need guns and cannons now before it's too late.
Liberty pushed his nose in between Washington and me as if to say, Hey, remember me? The horse that got you here?
George smiled and touched his hand to Liberty's nose and noted, You have a magnificent horse. He looks strong and smart. I thought to myself, If you mean smart Alec, yes, he is. Smiling, I replied, He's been a faithful companion and a true patriot.
George raised an eyebrow and asked, Perhaps you'd be willing to enlist him in the Continental Army? I'm looking for a good horse. Riding a true patriot into war could make all the difference.
Liberty's eyes went wide. Giving up Liberty to help George Washington wasn't an option. Or was it? I didn't expect what happened next. Then again, with Liberty, everything was unexpected.
Chapter 9. Suddenly, Liberty's legs buckled and he fainted, falling straight to the ground. He looked like he was completely out cold.
Liberty! Liberty, are you okay? Freedom cried, running over to kneel beside him.
Liberty was on his side with both eyes shut.
I wondered if this was one of his attention-seeking stunts.
I took a deep breath and tried to explain the situation.
Don't worry, General Washington. Please go on ahead. My horse was a little under the weather yesterday and probably just needs a little rest.
Gratefully, Liberty didn't seem hurt, just fast asleep.
All right, but please do let me know if there is anything our men can do to help you.
Poor fellow, Washington said, looking kindly at Liberty before walking back toward the house.
I think he was really scared about the idea of being enlisted into the army, Tommy said, chuckling.
Yeah, I bet he passed out when he realized he wouldn't be getting 6 meals a day, Cam said with a laugh.
You guys shouldn't be laughing, Freedom said in a soft voice as she patted Liberty's side. Poor Liberty!
Liberty slowly opened one eye and weakly said,
No energy. Need carrot.
I was relieved Liberty was waking up, but I still wasn't totally sure if this was a stunt.
I'll get one, Tommy said, pulling a carrot from the saddlebag and waving it in front of Liberty's nose. Liberty, wake up, he added.
Liberty grabbed the carrot in his mouth and chomped it down.
Why isn't he getting up? Tommy asked.
No energy. Need apple,
said Liberty like he was on his deathbed. He was coughing and wheezing. He sounds awful, said Cam as he reached for an apple and fed it to Liberty. Liberty chomped the juicy apple with his eyes closed.
Maybe one more carrot and a sugar cube would be nice.
Freedom gave Liberty a big hug and said, I'm glad you're awake and feeling better.
Okay, up and at him, I said to Liberty. If he had truly fainted, he was clearly recovered now.
I couldn't help but smile at him despite myself. It looks as though General Washington has had second thoughts about recruiting Liberty as his war horse.
Whew,
Liberty said under his breath, but loud enough for us to hear.
Hey, where's little Liberty? Asked Tommy.
He was with us when George Washington was here, said Freedom.
Liberty, do you sense him?
I asked.
It feels like he's nearby, yeah, said Liberty. I think he was hungry, went looking for something to eat.
I'll need some volunteers to track down little Liberty, I said.
Not me, said Tommy. I'm sticking with you like glue, Mr. Revere.
Apparently the incident at the Battle of Lexington had left a lasting impression on Tommy.
I'll go, said Cam. Since this whole area is the Continental Army headquarters, I doubt we'll run into any redcoats.
True, I said, but under no circumstances should you leave Liberty.
I'll stick with Liberty, too, said Freedom. She climbed onto Liberty's saddle with Cam.
Liberty looked very content with the decision.
Fair enough, I said. Once you find little Liberty, bring him back here.
You got it, Captain, said Liberty.
Okay, let's go, troops.
As we parted ways, Tommy said,
I never got a chance to talk with George Washington. I saw him at the First Continental Congress, but he was with a lot of the other delegates.
Then I'm glad you chose to stick with me, I said, and you can help me explain what we learned to Cam and Freedom later. We walked back to the Continental Army headquarters, passing a guard to enter the home. As we walked through the doorway, I noticed several senior military officers seated in ornate chairs in the large front room.
How is your horse, Mr. Revere? General Washington asked as he looked up from a large map on the table.
He's much better, thank you. My other students are caring for him, I replied.
And just as I was about to ask about the map he was studying, a uniformed soldier briskly approached the general and said, Sir, I apologize for interrupting, but Henry Knox says he has urgent news and wishes to speak with you immediately.
Please send him in, General Washington said in a pleasant but firm tone.
In seconds, a large man came bounding down the hallway and right up to the general. He reminded me of Ed, talking excitedly about the plan to defeat Billy's team. Henry Knox had chubby red cheeks and wore a big smile. His uniform looked a little small. Before General Washington had a chance to make introductions, Knox blurted out, I have a plan to get the cannons. I know it'll work. I know how to do it. He was full of excitement.
The two other officers in the room did not share the same enthusiasm. Honestly, they looked like they had too much starch in their shorts.
Washington held up his hand to calm Knox. He turned to me and said, Rush Revere, meet Henry Knox. Henry has proven himself a true patriot in the past several years. He is young and tireless, and I like the way he thinks.
General Washington didn't smile, but his eyes twinkled as he glanced at Knox.
He continued, Henry has a brilliant mind, and I've been impressed with the fortifications he designed near Roxbury.
Thank you, sir, said Knox.
And this is Rush Revere. He's a friend and a son of Liberty. He and I first met at the First Continental Congress. Samuel Adams and John Hancock told me that he risked his life in helping Paul Revere warn of the Redcoat invasion at Lexington and Concord. General Washington gestured to Tommy. And this young man is one of his students.
It's a pleasure meeting you, Mr. Knox, I said, smiling.
General Washington turned to Henry and asked, Now then, how are you coming with the artillery?
Knox nearly jumped from his mud-crusted boots and said, I have wonderful news. This morning when I examined the map, an idea struck me on how to retrieve the guns. Let me show you.
He moved across the room like a bull in a china shop. Several vases nearly topped to the floor by the time he reached the center table. He unfolded a large parchment and placed it on the table so everyone could see it.
As he smoothed out the corners, I noticed it was a map of the New England states and eastern New York state. "Here," jeered Knox. He pointed a chubby finger at New York, specifically at the southern end of Lake Champlain, at a place called Fort Ticonderoga. He practically screamed, "We can get them from Ticonderoga!"
Tommy whispered, "Hey, Ticonderoga, I remember you said it's the next best thing to a weapons depot, right?"
Tommy smirked. I nodded, impressed with Tommy's memory. Frowning, an older military man who was missing a finger said, "General Washington, this plan is outrageous. Ticonderoga is nearly 300 miles away through harsh terrain. It'll take months and thousands of men to bring those guns back here. It's a fool's journey to..." Washington calmly interrupted, "I am interested to hear what Knox has to say." He nodded for Henry to continue.
"Sir, we can do it," Henry said with confidence, still smiling. "I hope to bring back up to 60 heavy cannons down Lake George and the Hudson River to Albany and then pull them across Massachusetts."
The military officer was laughing now and shaking his head.
"An absolute impossibility," he said.
"I concur," said the other officer in the room, who had the shiniest boots I'd ever seen.
"The idea is utter nonsense. These cannons weigh up to 3,000 pounds, some heavier."
"Wow," exclaimed Tommy. "Don't even ask UPS to deliver something that heavy."
"Who is UPS? Are those someone's initials?" Washington asked. Everyone stared at Tommy. Would he tell them the real meaning was United Parcel Service? Tommy slowly replied,
Yeah, UPS stands for..."
He paused, but his thoughtful expression soon changed to a smile.
"It stands for Unusually Powerful Stormtroopers."
"Stormtroopers," said Washington. "I have never heard of these troops." Tommy nodded. "Well, yeah. These troops specialize in delivering the mail, especially in storms." Tommy looked my way and gave me an awkward grin.
"I see," said George. "I may need to use these unusually powerful stormtroopers someday. Now then, if no one else has a better plan, I'm inclined to support the mission to Ticonderoga."
The senior officer with a missing finger replied, "Sir, this is ridiculous and a waste of time. We should concentrate our limited energies elsewhere." Ignoring the officer, General Washington stood with authority and said, "I have seen what Knox has done with our fortifications. He is loyal. He is smart. He is fearless. He witnessed the Boston Massacre and fought at the Battle of Bunker Hill. I've seen him take on challenge after challenge and rise to every occasion." The officer with the shiny boots was turning red.
"But, sir, he's only 25 years old, not to mention he's overweight. And just look at the mud on his boots."
Knox shifted in his muddy boots as he listened to the debate.
"He may be young, but these colonies are young. He may have mud on his boots, but we can all use a little mud once in a while," said General Washington.
Exasperated, the older officer replied, "Yes, but this shows a lack of discipline. We will never win against the King's Empire with disorderly conduct and delirious ideas. I strongly object to this plan, sir." The fire crackled and popped in the fireplace. Nobody in the room dared to move or say a word until George Washington broke the silence. "Your objection is noted. Thank you," said Washington. "But I believe we need more men like Henry Knox. Or should I say, Colonel Knox of the Continental Army?" Knox beamed at the promotion and bowed slightly to his commander-in-chief.
"I will do you and this country right, sir," said Knox. "See you soon with the guns of Ticonderoga."
"Our freedom depends on it," said General Washington. Without another word, Colonel Knox gathered his map and bounded out the door, leaving a trail of dried mud. Even after he was outside, I could hear his voice yelling for men to gather supplies. The other military leaders looked upset as they left the room and exited the house. I glanced through the window and noticed Liberty and Freedom arriving with Cam and Little Liberty trailing close behind. seemed like a good time to say our goodbyes and be off. "Thank you, General Washington," I said, putting out my hand to shake his. "This has been most informative. I look forward to our next visit." "I hope Colonel Knox gets the cannons," Tommy said with a smile as we walked toward the door.
"So do I," George Washington said. "If Knox manages to get those guns from Fort Ticonderoga, we have a fighting chance to win this war." Once again, we said our goodbyes and walked out to the porch and over to where the rest of Rush Revere's crew had gathered. Tommy raced up to Little Liberty and petted his bushy head.
"I'm glad they found you," said Tommy. "Where was he?"
"In someone's garden, making himself a snack," said Liberty.
"Seriously, this kid needs a babysitter, 24/7.
Liberty leaned close to my ear and whispered.
"We're leaving the pony here, right? Please tell me we're leaving him here."
I temporarily ignored Liberty and said, "We need to find a secluded place to time jump. It looks like there's a small pasture beyond those trees. Tommy, you should tell the rest of our crew what happened inside."
"Oh, yeah. They were having this top-secret meeting about getting guns from Fort Ticonderoga to fight the British."
Cam perked up and jokingly said, "Top secret? Was super spy James Bond there? Oh, wait. Isn't James Bond British?
It wasn't 007, but he was big enough to be 007. Seriously, this dude was big," I clarified.